Welcome! I'm Justin Mink, and this is The Nexus. The podcast where we explore the intersection of branding, company culture, and marketing, alongside the brightest minds in franchising. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode. Well, I say another, the second episode of The Nexus. Have a fun guest today, Bernard Birnbaum. Bernard is the CEO and president of Birnbaum Companies and doing some really cool things in the franchise space. The Warrior Factory is Bernard's pillar concept. It's if you've watched American Ninja, you kind of know the gist of it. Super cool concept, a lot of fun, and I think really of the moment. I think especially the fact that there's such a community, a tight-knit community. Bernard and I have hung out at the IFA in Orlando and at other conferences, and I've had the opportunity to learn about the concept and what a cool community sort of feel there is around being a part of the brand. So I'll let Bernard introduce himself. Bernard, great to meet you, man. Well, great to meet you. Great to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Justin. I appreciate you having me on this. I'm excited to talk about Warrior Factory and franchising and community building and culture, which is all really big aspects of what we're doing. So I'm president and CEO of Birnbaum Companies, and then our main subsidiary, one of our main subsidiaries of that is the Warrior Factory, which is an indoor obstacle park in which we replicate what you see in American Ninja Warrior. It's kind of funny, like we talk about culture, and the way that we started this business is because of the ninja culture and the ninja community. I was a avid fan watching on the couch with my wife saying, oh, I could do that. And like all of us at home when we watched that show, like, oh, it doesn't look too hard. I can do that. And she's like, well, then go try and do it. I'm like, all right. So I looked up and there was nothing local that had any capability to do this. I found a place in Buffalo, which is about an hour from where I live. Started driving there once or twice a week, really got into it, met a lot of great people. And then I was watching the show one day and I saw there was this guy from Rochester, New York. His name's Carl Fantuzzo on the show. And I was like, that's awesome. There's a guy locally that's doing this. Reached out to him on Facebook, got ghosted, didn't respond. Ran into him at a local competition in Buffalo. I was like, hey, you know, like, what's up? I messaged you, like, you know, I'd love to do like a gym or something. And he's like, okay. And then like, I tried messaging him again, didn't get a response. Saw him again in another competition. And then at that point he was finally like, okay, like, let's do this. So we met up, started fleshing out the ideas of this concept, traveled around the country to see other locations that were doing something similar and figuring out what they were doing well and areas that they can improve upon. Then we launched the brand in 2017, ended up franchising the concept in 18. And then in 19 is when we really started, you know, moving forward with opening a second corporate location, our first franchisee. And now in 2020, we just signed our first franchisee up in Canada. So it's been a pretty quick journey and it's been super exciting. And, you know, one of those things that we always try to push is the community and the warrior culture.
Yeah, it's cool. By the way, it's just yet another lesson about how more than half the battle in success is just showing up. And you obviously yeah. were persistent and sort of could not be denied. And now it's turned into this fast growing brand that you're partnering with some really well known guys in this segment. So that's super cool.
Yeah, it was always. Taught if you want something to happen, you have to be somewhere. And just sitting at home waiting for something to happen, it's not going to happen.
Forward momentum at all times, yeah. No matter what, right?
Keep grinding, man.
Yep. Right? Yep. That's more than half the battle. Well, part of the reason that I wanted to have you as a guest is when we were hanging out, you know, we talked a lot about the culture of the Ninja Warrior community. Yeah. So I'm interested to learn more about that culture and sort of how you envision pushing that at scale as you guys grow, or not pushing that, but really keeping that culture and that spirit sort of at the forefront and active throughout the brand as you continue to expand.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the warrior culture, as we call it, is just, it's probably like the main point that we push when we talk to potential franchisees. And then once our franchisees are in place, you know, just bringing them into the fold. It's one of those things. It's, you know, it's funny, like we often say it's very similar to the franchise community. It's very inviting. Everybody's willing to help each other out, you know, give a lot of advice, things that didn't work for them, things that are working for them. And the biggest thing that we love about the sport is that it's great for people who don't want to be in a traditional sport that is super competitive, where it's always team against team, person against person. And in this culture and in this sport, it's about you beating an obstacle. It's about you overcoming something. And you'll see people cheering for a kid who's been trying to get up the warped wall, which is that big, huge, curved, half-pipe looking thing, for an hour. And then the last second, they'll finally get the wall, and like the whole gym erupts. And it's just because people are just excited to see someone overcome something that they had never thought possible.
Yeah.
So just watching that type of culture and that community, and you know, I've got two small kids. I've got a 7 and 8 year old, and they do ninja. They go to classes, you know, they have their birthday parties there, all that type of stuff. And it's just watching their confidence and how well they've been able to take the strength from ninja and apply it to other sports has been really cool to see that. So going back to the culture, it's really community focused. It's coming together for a common goal of learning to challenge yourself and then overcome something that you didn't think that you could, and not putting somebody else down, because there's never a place for that. There's, you know, we've had some macho people coming in. You know, you think of like, you know, the typical like bodybuilders, or, you know, that can sometimes be a little intimidating, and like, it just never meshes well within in the concept or within the facility. They get humbled really quickly too, because it's a totally different skill set and strength. But it's really awesome to see everyone come together and cheer each other on, and it's not fighting against each other or competing. It's really that culture of, let's come together and all overcome something that we didn't think we could.
Very cool. So I have a question that's going to seem like a total out of left field, not cohesive with this thread, but I promise I'm going to bring it back. So over the next 5 years, what are your expansion plans? How do you envision the brand growing?
Yeah, over the next 5 years, you know, we are really focused on hopefully the Northeast and going south, you know, down towards Florida, and then also really expanding into Canada a lot. Everyone's always like, well, you're such a new brand, why are you going international this early on? Based on where we are in Rochester, New York, I'm an hour from the border. So it makes a lot of sense for us to expand in the Canadian market. So we see good amount of expansion occurring there. But one of the bigger things that we really want to do is continue to push this as a viable sport for kids and adults. They just actually had there's a league called National Ninja League, and they just had their world championship this past weekend in North Carolina. They rented out an arena. They had thousands and thousands of competitors from around the country and even the world come there for this world finals. And you can see this, like, the sparks and like the embers of like a new sport emerging here, especially with like the obstacle course racing that's out there. And now kids are getting involved in that with all the Spartans, tough mudders. And there's a few other ones as well, that it's kind of this new movement of changing the way that we think about exercising and fitness. Now, is this ever going to replace a traditional gym? No. I think it kind of becomes like a secondary way of training, and I guess it's also experiential, which is a huge part of all retail right now. It's that experiential. It's that building ideas, memories, community. So we just want to keep pushing that. You know, hopefully we'll have 40 units in the next 5 years. That'd be awesome. But, you know, I'm also realistic to understand that because it is a new industry, we have to educate a lot of people of what it is.
Yeah, we were chatting about this at the IFA convention, how I wish this had been around when I was a kid, because I would have been all over it, you know.
Right.
It looks so much fun. Now I think I'd probably break a kneecap within about half a second of running a course.
Yeah, I'm pretty fragile nowadays too. And it's one of those things, you know, it's today we're such a technology focused world that you're constantly trying to find that balance with kids between being active and being, you know, in front of a computer screen.
Yeah. And anything kinda, that I think can get a kid off the couch and active and excited about that, I think is a good thing for this world. So here's where I'm tying it back. So at you know, less, you know, a handful of locations, I think, and kind of organic growth, you've probably got folks interested in being a part of the brand who are passionate about what you do, or probably active athletes in the space, maybe. As you grow to 40 and, you know, hopefully beyond, how do you see sort of how do you walk the line between keeping the culture at the forefront of how you identify your partners, and then also considering, you know, the scale concerns and considerations that, you know, not everyone's going to fit that archetype. And at some point you probably have to, you know, appeal to more sophisticated investors who are not quite living the lifestyle. So how do you sort of walk that line?
Yeah. You know, it's difficult. I think it really comes down to making sure our interviewing and our process follows our brand standards, and just really getting people who are part of the culture. You know, the investor model doesn't fully work, I feel like. You know, like, I feel like you have to have some type of, you know, I don't even know if a semi-absentee model would work. You really need to be ingrained in the industry and in the culture. And it's going to come from the top down, right? It's going to come from Carl and I just showing them that we're living our lives the same way that we would expect our franchisees, when it's embodying the ninja, the warrior culture, making sure that your community, your kids, your staff are all embodying that. You know, another way that we are trying to do is that there's a lot of people out there who are part of the ninja community and are looking for employment opportunities.
Yeah.
So trying to identify some of these potential ninjas, I guess, as we would call them,
yep,
to come in there and be like a GM or a head coach or any of those other roles. So that type of culture and mentality can be there from day one, and it's not educating a fully green staff.
So what's the initial, what does it cost to get for a franchise candidate? What's their all in investment to open up a Warrior factory?
Yeah. So right now, you know, we're modifying our item 7 a little bit. And I think we're going to be able to get between like that 650 and like a little under 900 range. And that's going to vary for a size between a 6,500 and 8,000 square foot unit.
Got it. So do you have that's a relatively hefty investment, right?
It really is. Yeah. But it's more one time, you know, because once you have all the obstacles and the equipment, it's not like there's a lot of inventory or cogs that are being spun over.
So here's a question that I have for you. And I'm curious to hear about your strategy or thoughts about it, because a lot of the brands that I feel like sort of share your DNA a little bit are as far as looking for folks who are really operators, part of the lifestyle, live it, passionate about it, going to be in the facility every day sweating, you know, with, mm-hmm, with the staff and with your customers. A lot of those that they're kind of fitness oriented, but more traditional fitness, whether it's boutique, boot camp, health clubs. And their appeal is to folks who have been in the industry, maybe as trainers or managers, who don't necessarily have access to a ton of capital, but are passionate. And the barriers to entry are pretty low, you know, 50,000, low six figure fees all in. So how do you balance a pretty hefty investment with your sort of the ethos of being a part of this culture and being in it?
Yeah, that's you know, one of those things that we're still struggling to fully understand. You know, we're constantly trying to get that initial investment dollar amount down so it can become more accessible. You know, what we are seeing is it's going to be more of groups of people. A couple of our newest franchisees or some of the perspectives are, you'll have an individual like you're saying that's got a huge background within the fitness industry, but they don't have the full capital needed to open a facility. but they may have an investor or friends and families that can provide that capital. And we're seeing more of that. And it's kind of just really understanding how we are going to grow with such a high price point. It's tough because we are competing in a space where there's a lot of other concepts that are entertainment / fitness oriented. But at the same time, we also are a little bit lower than some of these larger square footage concepts like trampoline parks and a few other entertainments. So if there's somebody who's looking for that type of experiential concept, we are on the getting on the lower side there.
Yeah.
But it is something that we're struggling with too, that we're seeing.
So I'm glad you brought that up, kind of led into sort of my next thread of questioning, and that's around the competitive landscape. Because right now there's not really much direct head-to-head competition in this category, right?
There's a lot of smaller local gyms out there that are, you know, individual people who've been on the show or want to be on the show and open a small local gym. And then when it comes to like franchising and larger scale, there's really only a couple other competitors in the space right now. And we're all pretty much at that same level.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we're friendly with them because we all understand that it's a new emerging industry. And when it's you by yourself, people are like, is this real? But as soon as there's a couple of people in the space, it's like, oh, there's actually an industry here, right? So I like that there's one or two other competitors that are trying to get to the same scale that we are.
Yeah.
Because it's showing legitimacy of the business.
So right now it clearly is kind of rising tide raises all the ships, and there's no like violent scrap, if you want to call it dogfight over limited bones.
But yeah, not yet.
But are you competing for share of wallet with other kind of adjacent types of businesses?
Yeah, I think we are. You know, we always get compared to the trampoline parks, just because we do a lot of birthday parties. We've got open, you know, play sessions, similar to how they have the jumping sessions. So we are competing with them. But at the same time, I think between like trampoline parks and any, you know, the bounce houses or any of those other concepts, sometimes you age out of those and people are also looking for something different. We do ours a little differently too. And it's not just like an open free-for-all. Like you can't just come to the facility whenever you want. We actually have it as set times, scheduled, like, okay, like our open gyms could only be from like 9 to like, you know, 10:30 today. And then there'll be like a birthday party after. And we do that for a number of reasons. But the biggest one is safety, because what we are doing is a little bit more risky. I would say, you know, we haven't had any major injuries that would be outside of a normal sport.
Yeah.
But you know, it's always in the back of somebody's mind, especially when you have like a 6 or 7 year old out there doing some crazy stuff. You want to make sure that a 15 year old isn't running across the floor and knocking into them as they're trying to do something. So that becomes like one of our competitive advantages, is that we kind of keep everything really scheduled and oriented to be more personalized than just anybody can stop at any time.
Well, it's actually, you just brought up a point that kind of leads into the next big pillar of this podcast, and that's branding. Because
yeah,
I think unlike a lot of franchises, well, you still have this consideration, but you've got a whole different one. And most franchises that are in well-established business categories, it's about their own sort of unique brand differentiator and how you sit, where you sit in the competitive landscape, and how to make sure that all the local marketing activities that your franchisees engage in is consistent with that sort of core, those core brand values and differentiators. But I think what's unique about your space is that when you think about branding, I would imagine you think about branding the entire business category, the whole concept, not just your own brand, not just the Warrior Factory.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole brand is always, you know, it's like you said, it's not just the Warrior Factory. It's American Ninja Warrior. It's Ninja Warrior. It's looking at all the, you know, I think there's about like 10 other countries around the world. They have their own version of Ninja Warrior now. So it's really looking at this kind of not even as localized, but nationally and globally sometimes. So how are we going to, you know, not only stand out, but how are we going to work well with what's going on in the shows or what's happening in the ninja community? And a lot of that for branding purposes for us, you know, we really try to provide as much information to our franchisees for, you know, their opening, their continuing social media, you know, providing with them those flyers, social media, new logos, like constantly. You know, we have got a huge Dropbox with every single new logo. It's a big thing that we like to play around with. So like we just have a new logo for St. Patrick's Day, right? So it's really pushing that branding and awareness outside of just our normal channels, but also then using our brand to piggyback off of a lot of other events that happen throughout the year. I think it's a good way to like intertwine, you know, as we keep talking about branding and culture and community. You know, one of the biggest things that we push for our branding and community is involvement with some of your local organizations and giving back. It's a big thing that we try to do. And, you know, in October, we'll do breast cancer. So you'll work with one of your local breast cancer coalitions and we'll do like t-shirts and special like open plays. And then in November, we'll do like food drive. In December, Toys for Tots. And then Special Olympics. So we're constantly looking for opportunities for the brand to get outside of the brand and really have an impact on their communities.
That's awesome. And I, you know, I think it's kind of a double-edged sword for you guys. It's an opportunity as well as a challenge, because unlike a lot of really well-known business categories, even in the space you guys occupy where people are looking for, you know, active ways to spend time and channel their kids' energies in a healthy way and, you know, ways that are supportive, people aren't going to Google and searching for, you know, ninja activities by and large, right? They might be searching for kids' activities or, you know, birthday party activities, but they're not searching exactly for what you guys have to offer. So there's not a lot of demand to channel through the internet that exists and capture, but there is a huge opportunity to create demand.
Yeah.
And that's through education and identifying who is your audience, who are the folks that are predisposed to be attracted to your ethos, your product, your service, and how to message to them in a way that resonates and draws them into you. So, as you look out at the marketing landscape and how you educate, how you engage, the programs you put together for to support the acquisition efforts of your franchisees, how do you think about that? Do you have a strategy, or is it one that's sort of being baked as we speak?
It's a little bit of both. You know, we're such a new brand that we're still really understanding like what our full demographic is, but we've got a general idea of who our core customer is and how to identify them. But I think that, you know, you brought up the biggest point is, you know, the general public, unless you're watching the show, isn't like, oh, Ninja Warrior. Like
right.
it's not there yet. Now, I do think that one of the big advantages that we have is that we're such a visually appealing concept that videos and photos just tell so much in such a quick little snip that when someone does see that online, they can instantly understand like, oh, okay, like what's going on there? Or I want to know more about what's going on there. So it really becomes targeting more of those general groups. And usually it's all, you know, a lot of parents, you know, like middle-aged parents who are going to have younger kids that are looking for new activities. We're trying to get more into the adults, but it's always hard to penetrate the adult market just because there's so much competition with all the different hobbies and other fitness opportunities that are out there. Like that's a little bit harder demo for us to hit.
Yeah.
But for the, you know, middle-aged parents who've got a couple young kids and are looking for something different, that's kind of like our sweet spot right now. And we've even gone as far as starting to look for, you know, local influencers or bloggers, you know, the mommy bloggers or however you want to classify them, and trying to get them to see the concept. So it is kind of reaching a broader audience. We've even developed a homeschool program. So we become the fitness elements for a homeschool like on a weekly basis. So we'll have like a group of kids come in that are homeschooled and now we become their gym class basically. So it's kind of reaching out into those channels that we wouldn't initially think about, finding, you know, a Facebook group for a local chapter of homeschool kids that are all communicate to each other, or just really you know, pushing as much visual information out on all the different social medias right now.
Yeah. I think from a branding and a marketing perspective, I would imagine that there's also, you've got to be thinking about sort of ways you can almost corner the market, because you are you've got the first mover advantage.
Yeah.
Right. In many cases you'll be that sort of light bulb, that catalyst to even give the idea that someone might have that, oh my gosh, this is something that I've seen on TV and now that I can engage in myself. Like, how cool is that? I mean, do you think about, okay, we are first movers. Do you have these like long-term visions to kind of dominate the marketplace? I mean, you know, a good analogy would be like, people say Google it when they mean search.
Yep.
I want a Xerox when it's a copy.
Totally.
You know, do you think about the Warrior Factory owning the space?
Of course I think about it. I'd love it to become a reality. It's always, it's just, you know, as you know, it's such a capital intensive business to be able to come that, you know, I guess that noun in our vocabulary that means more than one thing, right? And we just got to continue, I think, just create larger brand awareness. I think we'll get there. And I think the biggest thing is that our community is going to drive it. I mentioned that National Ninja League World Championship this past weekend, and we had all of our units representing there, and we had the largest contingency of qualifying participants there.
Oh, that's super cool.
Our head coach, who is from Rochester, head coach, and then he's part of our, we've developed a curriculum for all of our students to come in, where this is a way for them to train, very similar to martial arts. They'll start as a white band, and then once they can complete a certain amount of obstacles, they can test to go up to the next level, and so on and so on. And our head coach was really pivotal in developing this process. He was actually named head coach of the year from this organization.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's really showing that, to your point, like, we're becoming like part of that standard in the forefront of it. When we have the largest contingency, we've got the head coach, we have one of our students, he was he was classified as the world championship. He's like champion. He's 15 years old, but he just dominated everything. We've got another student who was classified as the strongest female ninja. She won like all the skills and her division. So as we build the community, it'll legitimize us as being that number one. And I think that's just going to have to keep being at the forefront of, the more we build our communities, the stronger we are in the ninja community. And then the more we'll be known in the general community.
Yeah. And you mentioned it earlier, brand is so implicitly kinetic.
Yeah.
I think just showing that dynamic aspect of what it is like to be experiencing one of your facilities, and I'm sure a look of complete joy and elation on a kid's face when the first time they run a course or the first time they manage to get through an obstacle that they've had challenges with, you know, you shoot some guerrilla video on an iPhone and probably go viral and generate millions of dollars worth of,
oh yeah,
of earned media. So it's a super exciting opportunity for you guys, I think.
Yeah, and especially with, you know, because our target consumer is that middle-aged or younger parent who basically lives on social media, right? So they're constantly taking videos and photos of their child in the facility and then posting them to Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, or, you know, we're getting more into TikTok now too.
Yeah.
Just because we are in that younger demo. And they basically do a lot of our marketing for us, because they'll tag us, then we can always repost it. Or, you know, to your point, a lot of it is, you know, little Johnny with his hand in the air because he just got through X obstacle, and, you know, everybody's cheering.
So it's actually, so that's another good segue to the last sort of thread of line of questioning I have for you, or line of questions. And that's around this generation gap. Because your brand is such a sort of the moment kind of emerging space, and you've got probably parents who are millennials themselves and grown up in the sharing their life on social media. Do you intentionally appeal to certain younger families, or do you kind of more broadly market? And if you do, do you see big differences in terms of how people embrace your brand across the generations?
Definitely. I think the we do kind of target that younger parent, the younger demographic. You know, most of our participants are aged, I would say, like 7 to 12. That's where like our largest demo of students and members and kids are, really. And it's because our brand is so appealing, it's so different. We, the millennial generation, just really has embraced us because they want that experience. They want to do something fun. They want to build memories. They don't just want to like sit there, you know, and watch their kid do something. A lot of the times they want to do it with the kid. That's why we implemented family open gyms. So that way a kid and a parent can be out there together, because normally we segregate the kids and the adults so they don't run into each other and hurt each other. But we were seeing so many parents wanting to be out there that we ended up creating a whole nother open gym of that family open gym to get them involved. Because it's like the kids are like, this is awesome, this is awesome. The parents are like, that is kind of cool. Like, I want to try that. And because they are younger, millennial, and a lot of millennials are more health focused and fit, that they can actually go out there and do the stuff with their kids. So I think that the millennial generation is a huge part. But then we also do get a lot of older generations, because we get a lot of grandparents bringing their kids in there. And they might not understand all the social media aspect of it, but they still understand how cool it is to see their grandchild do something that they couldn't do. And they're just amazed. I would say, like, if you walk into our lobby, it's probably like almost 50-50, or maybe like 60-40 of parents and grandparents that are there taking their child or grandchild for an open play or to have that experience.
That's awesome. I mean it from the bottom of my heart. If you guys had been around when I was a kid, oh my gosh, I would have eaten it up.
It's great. I think because all kids hang on stuff, all kids climb around things. And the biggest, the greatest part is that they don't realize that they're actually exercising and improving themselves or getting stronger or healthier. You know, we've had parents let us know that their kids were like crying the next day because their body hurt. And they didn't know why. And the parents would say, that's because you were exercising.
That's crazy. That's the first time they've ever been muscularly sore in their lives. Yeah. That's crazy.
And as a little kid who's like 7 or 8, they don't know what's wrong, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's scary. Wake up. Yeah. Mommy. Why did my arms hurt? Well, you had a good workout.
Exactly. And then they're like, and then they go back and then they train some more and they can do it again. And then that feeling gets less and less and they just get stronger and stronger. It's amazing to see how strong some of these kids have gotten in such a short period of time. And I can't imagine, you know, we talk about it internally a lot, watching the show of where it is now and where it's going to be in 10 years if it's still on, because the level of competitors is going to be leaps and bounds of what it is now, because you're getting these kids who have been growing up doing this for, you know, 5-10 years now. And that their strength level is just insane.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool to, you know, obviously future state, long-term vision, but, you know, someday to have, you know, elite athletes competing and, hey, representing the Warrior Factory and, you know, grew up, trained and kind of come through the ranks to the elite level, having gone through
And we've gotten a couple, because they do like, they have a Ninja Warrior Junior show that they tape now where it's kids versus kids. And we've had quite a number of our students compete on that. They even are, I know they're trying to get obstacle course racing or something similar into the Olympics. I know they've been trying to push that hard. I don't know if it's going to get there right away, but I could see it eventually getting there, because I think they just added speed climbing to the 2020 Olympics.
Oh, I could see it. I could see it happening. Why not? You know, if rhythmic gymnastics is an Olympic sport, no offense to any rhythmic gymnasts listening, because I think it's cool. But if rhythmic gymnastics, then why not Ninja Warrior competition, right?
Yeah, it'd be cool. People love it.
Well, Bernard, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. If any of the audience wants to learn more about the Ninja the Warrior Factory, either to be a customer and take their kids or go themselves, or potentially to look into the opportunity to be a partner, where should they go?
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Yeah, the easiest way to learn about the Warrior Factory is just going to thewarriorfactory.com. And at thewarriorfactory.com, it'll give you all of the open locations, any coming soon. And then you'll be able to find some franchise information up there as well. If you just go to any of those sites, there's a little franchising tab. So
awesome.
If anybody, we'd love to see everybody at the facility. You know, we're mostly in New York and Canada right now, but we are looking to move outside of New York in the near future.
Very cool. Well, wishing you the best of luck. I know I'll be following you closely. And thanks again, Bernard. It was awesome to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was great.
Take care, man.